He's right in front of me, and I can honestly tell him that I'm going to knock him spark out. Leaping right hand by the Prince. Ooh. And a hard left. And Kelly's down for the third time.
Whoa! He's for real. The Prince is for real.
One more punch to do it. And Tardivan's done. Bernard Dunn is the champion of the world. Bernard Dunn is the champion of the world. Fantastic, Bernard. Fantastic.
And here comes Andy Lee in now. Look at these shots.
You're very welcome along to this week's edition of Off the Brawl on offtheball.com. It was a busy weekend for the Irish fighters in America, headlined by Katie Taylor at the TD Garden in Boston. Ronan Mullen was ringside to call the action, and here's how myself and Phil Egan got on with him earlier on.
Ronan, I imagine there's a great buzz around Boston. The World Series starts tonight.
Yeah, the day I arrived, Phil, they were playing the Houston Astros, and I literally turned on the TV. And the first thing I saw was a foul ball. Basically, the Astros were going for a home run, and one of the fans basically tried to intercept it. And it was just like, I was like, is this actually happening? The first thing I saw. But yeah, as you said, like, the Red Sox fever set in. You got the Celtics back in action, and the Patriots won on Sunday night as well. So, like, a lot of, like, typically busy sporting week for Boston, you know?
Yeah, it's a great city for sports. So, obviously, you were in Boston Garden on Saturday night. Katie Taylor was the main focus for Irish fighters. And just, we talked about it last week, Ronan, on how, you know, she can only beat who's put in front of her. We all expected a really tough test from Cindy Serrano, and it just never materialised.
No, and Katie spoke in the build-up about how she expected this to be her toughest fight, and, like, a lot of respect for Cindy, more so than Amanda, which we'll probably get to later, but... she was visibly irked throughout the fight, you know, when she realized that Cindy was just on a survival mission. And there was a palpable sort of expectation in the crowd that Katie was going to put on a show, and Cindy sort of robbed her of that opportunity because she just didn't engage. It was a one-woman show, really, and Cindy was just along for the ride. And it's no, like, Cindy Serrano's a former world champion, you know, has operated at the top level, albeit at lighter weights. And it was just a real sense of disappointment that she didn't, like, partake in this showcase for women's boxing.
Yeah, like, in the lead up to the fight, obviously you're at the venue, you're at the weigh-ins the day before. What was the buzz about Katie Taylor in Boston? Like, people in Boston, obviously a lot of Irish over there, but they know of Katie Taylor, so they would have turned up, as you said, looking to see her put on a show. Not her fault. I mean, no. At one stage in the seventh round, she put her hands behind her back and was leaning against the ropes and beckoned on Cindy Serrano, but she didn't want to fight.
Yeah, no, like, she got the full board Boston media treatment, even despite the, as you mentioned, all this other sporting activity that was going on. On Thursday, losing track of the days here, but Thursday, the press conference was at Fenway Park, just off the back of one of the wins for the Red Sox. So, like, huge buzz around the place, and Katie was right front and centre. Like, we'll probably get on to the main event later, but, you know, this was the quasi-main event, really. This is what 90% of the crowd had come to see, and she was featured in the Boston Globe and front page of some of the Metro papers as well. So, like, The Zone and Matchroom have made a real point of trying to tap into these, you know, domestic, local American markets. So you're talking about the Irish-American market, Italian-American. There was a big Polish-American turnout on Saturday night as well, so... she was really given this great platform to perform, and she did her best, and it wasn't for the want of trying. Like, there was other fights on the card, the main event maybe, where Andrade sort of, like, took his licks and realized, I'm not going to knock this guy out, I'm just going to coast and save it for another day, whereas Katie was cutting the ring off consciously, you know, loading up on most of her shots. So she was really making an effort to entertain the crowd, and as you mentioned, a bit of showboating. She mentioned, we might get to one of the clips where she said she was getting a bit bored in there, and that was just a means of just sort of keeping herself entertained as much as anything.
I got quite bored halfway through the fight, actually. She really wasn't doing much at all. I was very, very surprised. I really did expect my toughest fight tonight. It was quite disappointing that she was just in there to survive for the 10 rounds. I had a lot of respect for Cindy going into this fight. I thought she was going to given everything she had tonight, but she was just quite happy to just survive for the 10 rounds, which is, you know, why would you do that as a fighter? Just give your all, and I'd actually prefer to be knocked out. Why give my all rather than survive for 10 rounds?
Yeah, and we should point out as well, by the way, Cindy Serrano's never been stopped. So that was probably in her head where she was thinking, I don't want to be stopped. It doesn't matter if I am fighting Katie Taylor. But I suppose the beauty of this is maybe it just tees it up even better for the Amanda Serrano fight. And I don't know how close you were to the ring, but could you hear the kind of taunts from Jordan Maldonado, the husband of Cindy Serrano?
Yeah. I'd say dinner at the Serrano table was entertaining, Phil, but yeah, we were just beside the red corner, so you could see him being very animated, and like, it didn't seem he was giving her much tactical advice. It was just a lot of trash talking, which you wouldn't normally associate with in-ring action, but like, what is he at? Like, it's crazy stuff, and like, Amanda is evidently a more potent threat to Katie Taylor, but you know, you can save that for another day. That fight's going to happen, and you know, that's a proper sort of matchup, so we're all looking forward to that one, but it's for another day. And Cindy, like, wasn't given the best opportunity to, like, people are going to come away from that, casual boxing fans, and assume Cindy Serrano, they're going to throw in with the other Katie Taylor opponents. But Cindy Serrano is like a big name in boxing, getting on a bit in years, but you know, she just didn't give a good account of herself at all, and it was disappointing.
Yeah, I think, like, I watched the fight again last night, and it was just, Katie didn't get a chance at all to showcase her skills. Where do you think she goes next?
Well, the talk is, it was funny in the press conference after, she was, herself and Brian Peters were sort of lobbying for Madison Square Garden on the Canelo undercard, and Canelo was obviously signed with DAZN as well, so that's big news since we last spoke. I think we were talking about how the DAZN thing really hadn't gotten off the ground yet, but they've now got Anthony Joshua and Canelo, probably the two biggest names in the sport, so Katie's going to hopefully appear on Madison Square Garden on December 15. If not that, it'll be December 22nd at the O2, which is looking like a Dillian White headliner, possibly with Derek Chisora, and Luis Ortiz also being mentioned. So we'll see what happens there. If Dillian White doesn't appear, it'll probably be Kell Brook headlining. So either way, Katie's going to have a big platform before Christmas. And, you know, they're really going full board on the Katie Taylor momentum. Any doubts we had that Eddie Hearn was going to kind of fall off the wagon with Katie Taylor is they've been put to rest. She's very much in his plans and at the forefront of this Matchroom USA / Matchroom UK movement.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say Eddie has already surpassed our thoughts and where we thought he'd go with Katie, giving her this massive platform. I mean, even the other night, the national anthems were sang for Ireland and for Puerto Rico. So it was
just stand up, Ronan. The anthem.
It was unbelievable. Like, we got there super early. It was honestly one of the longest sporting events I've ever been to. So Sean McComb kicked it off at 4:30 and then Niall Kennedy came shortly after that. But before all that began, Ronan Tynan came into the ring to do like his pre-match sort of rendition of the national anthems, like as a practice.
Yeah.
And like, there was no one there, and it was honestly one of the most spine-tingling things like I've ever seen. Like, there was just like all the stewards and stuff singing the American national anthem. It was just, it was very eerie, but really spine-tingling stuff. So it was a great occasion, and they really went for it. DAZN and Matchroom, almost to the detriment of the event a little bit, where the production was so full on, and you know, they were really trying to make a big presentation, that there was a lot of gaps in between the fights, and the crowd was getting a little bit, I don't want to say bored, but sort of, it wasn't as fast-paced as you might be used to in the UK or whatever. So,
like, how many times did they play Sweet Caroline?
They played Sweet Caroline straight after Katie's fight, but shipping up to Boston, Phil, I think it got about 17 plays. So they love that tune over there. Ken Casey was obviously Dropkick Murphy's. So
yeah.
It was a co-feature with Murphy's Boxing, so he was front and centre. He had a lot of fighters on the card, so it's no surprise that song got a few plays, you know.
Yeah, and obviously Gary Spike O'Sullivan was there, and a certain Conor McGregor. That happened during the Tevin Farmer and James Tennyson fight. He came in, like, was there rumbles in the crowd where it was like, oh, there's Conor McGregor? Because I don't think anyone expect him to be there?
Definitely not, no. I think the biggest Irish representation to that point was without the Kevin McBride, who turned up a couple of fights before that, so we all got a picture with Big Kev.
Did you and Mickey, line Irish him up Mickey to come Moore. On with us, did you?
Oh, Kevin will be on the show, Phil. We've been talking about that for a few weeks.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Mickey Ward?
No, Irish Mickey Ward was there to greet Niall Kennedy, so no pressure on Niall to perform with Mickey Ward at ringside. But no, it was great stuff. And as you said, Conor McGregor arrived just as the Tennyson Farmer fight was about to get underway. And the whole crowd rose to their feet and we weren't quite sure what was going on. Then I saw his unmistakable beard and I was like, oh, Conor McGregor. So it was great to have him there, I suppose. It kind of raised the status of the event and people who mightn't have known it was on kind of would have engaged with it a little bit more. And he was really respectful to Katie Taylor in the aftermath as well. So it was great to see, like, there would have been a lot of skepticism around McGregor that everything he does is sort of a marketing tool. But it seemed like he was genuinely there just to support Katie and was kind of like bowing down to her a little bit. He was like very respectful of her skills and saying she was flying the flag for Ireland. And rightly so. Like, I think we always speak about the fact that it's not Katie's fault that she's so superior to everybody else and her skills are peerless and we should appreciate that. We have probably the greatest female boxer of all time, you know, flying the flag for Ireland.
Okay, let's talk about the James Tennyson fight, Tevin Farmer. You know, we talked about it last week that this was a great chance for Tennyson, but disappointing, the body shots were the sucker punches from.
Yeah, like you come away from that fight and Tennyson definitely gave it his best chance. Unlike Cindy, James Tennyson was in there to win the fight and loading up on his shots. And he's a big puncher and he can hang with people at the top end of that division. But as it turned out, Tevin Farmer's just a really good fighter. You know, he's a real proponent of the sweet science and that stick and move style. Like, he wouldn't be the most concussive puncher. I think we spoke about it last week that he had some setbacks early in his career. He's kind of learning on the job a little bit and he was using Tennyson's front foot aggression against him, sort of leading him on to shots. And I think it was the second body shot that he dropped him with. It was a counter shot, so he basically threw Tennyson on and while Tennyson was throwing, caught him with that hook to the body and that kind of doubles the effect of the shot. And that's classic. That's boxing 101 and Tevin Farmer, he's going to be a headache for anyone in that division, especially Gervonta Davis. Like, that's a real high caliber fight at the top end of that division. But James Tennyson's only 25 and he would have taken a lot away from that fight, you know, in terms of the acumen on the inside. And like, that's a huge occasion, like a huge card. So you'll never have to worry about the mindset of gearing himself up for a big occasion like that again. So, like, there's a lot of learnings, to use a Joe Schmidt sort of truism, a lot of work on Phil. But I think James will come away and he'll be better for it in the long run, I think.
I mean, just to go back to that, Farmer, usually the taller fighter has the advantage, but Farmer seemed to have a low centre of gravity. He was drawing Tennyson on like a matador would a bull. And it just seemed like Farmer had two or three game plans, whereas Tennyson was just charged forward and trying to knock him out. I mean, how much do you think Tennyson can take from this and where's next for him?
Like, he can probably, like, this opportunity came probably quicker than he would have expected. He's just, that win over Martin Ward kind of propelled him up in the rankings and he was presented with this opportunity at 6 weeks' notice. And anyone who knows James Tennyson knows he's not going to turn down a chance like that. So he'll definitely come again. Maybe it'll be a couple of fights down the line before he gets back to the very top end. But Tevin Farmer, the world is his oyster now. I think we spoke about it last week that he's one of Matchroom's US-based world champions. So that's a big kind of calling card for him for the time being until the brand could sort of evolve. So at the moment, he's one of their featured players. And like, he took his opportunity with both hands. It was without a doubt the performance of the night. And fair play to him. You know, he's really burst onto the world scene now.
Yeah, talk of John O'Carroll. I'm seeing a bit of social media action.
Well, John O'Carroll is entering into the final eliminator for that title. So if it doesn't come as a voluntary defence, like, I think John's best course of action would be to take the final eliminator and get that win under his belt and then fight Tevin Farmer with all the add-ons that come with being a mandatory challenger, like no rematch clause and so on, you know, better cut of the money. Yeah. So I think Jono should back himself and win the final eliminator as a Matchroom debutant again. Granted, he was with him before, but like, he's properly a Matchroom boxer now. And like, try and win that fight in good fashion and then like really set himself up for that Farmer fight early part of next year.
Just moving on to the main event, Andrade against Coutinho Nduka.
Coutinho Nduka, Simon.
One more time.
People will ask, where were you when Walter Coutinho Nduka fought for the world middleweight title? And I can say I was there, Simon. I saw the man in action.
I was there to watch Billy Joe Saunders and Demetrius Andrade, but Coutinho Nduka turned up.
Well, just on that, he nearly won the fight by disqualification in the first round. Yeah. What did you make of that shot when he was on the ground?
Yeah, it was an odd one because it seemed like a very clear disqualification to me. Like, he was clearly struck on the ground, and anyone who follows Roy Jones, friend of the show, Roy Jones, he was DQ'd, lost his world title to Montel Griffin and his undefeated record for punching someone prone on the ground. And that was exactly what happened there. Mm. And it wasn't one of those where the guy was falling to the ground and he clipped him on the way down. Like, everyone could see that Kaito Ndakwa was down and he just struck him clean. And granted, the man is tough as nails. Like, he was dropped four times and just kept getting back up and didn't complain. Like, there's many fighters, I remember Andre Durrell sort of milked a similar situation a couple of years ago where he got hit in the ground and basically, like, called on the referee to disqualify the other fighter. So credit to Walter, he just got up there and got on with it, you know. And Andrade, like, it was nearly a star-making performance from him. Like, he's the best middleweight in the world already, in my opinion. Like, skill for skill, he's an incredible fighter. But after four rounds, unlike Cade, he just kind of resigned himself to the fact that I'm not getting this guy out of here. And I think he hurt his left hand, so after that blistering start, he just realized, right, let's save it for another day. There's bigger tests to come, and you know, I have no doubt that he's gonna clean out that division. He was the best light middleweight in the world that no one ever knew about, and now no one can hide from him. Now he's got one of the world titles at middleweight, and everyone signed to the DAZN platform. So those fights, whether they like it or not, Danny Jacobs and Canelo and Golovkin are gonna have to go through this guy, and I can't see anyone beating him, to be honest.
I'd have to disagree with you there for once. I think he was very sloppy from range. I thought he was brilliant up close. I thought he landed hooks and jabs and everything in short range. But from distance, I thought he was very loose and very sloppy. And I think somebody like Jacobs or even Derevianchenko would give him severe difficulty.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's very hard. Like, Kaito Ndakwa, we were speaking to Freddie Roach before the fight, and he's had him in the gym a few times and said it's one of the hardest punchers that's ever come through that division, or ever come through his gym. And when you're in there with someone, a crude puncher like that, where the skill deficit is so monumental and you're that much better than him, and yet at the back of your mind, you know, if I drop my focus here and get clipped, you know, how embarrassing it would be for me. No, like, I think there was that many knockdowns in that fight, I can't actually remember, but it was one where Kaito Ndakwa was throwing like a 1-2, and Andrade slipped in his shot in between the two shots. And you're just like, how many fighters in the world would have the balls basically to do something like that when there's a huge puncher firing at you and he basically knocked him down with a shot in between those shots? So
he could have got countered himself for that, though, I thought.
Yeah, it was weird when he seemed to be off balance. Like, I haven't got a chance to watch the fight back now, but yeah, it did seem he got clipped a little bit, but like Steve Willis, our favourite referee, obviously, so Kaito Ndakwa got hit heavy there, and just like, you can't blame him for missing maybe a brushing shot. I think that was more of a balance thing. You probably had a better vantage point than me on that. What did you think of it?
I think there was contact, so technically he could have been countered because he touched the canvas with his glove. So, but I think at that stage, Steve Willis was looking at Kaito Ndakwa.
Steve Willis getting excited?
He was. You know the way when there's a one-sided fight, he tends to put his eyes, all his focus is on the fighter that's in trouble, because he did say to Kaito Ndakwa that, you know, you gotta show me something, or I'm gonna call this fight. So he was just constantly looking at him. And then I find myself, when I'm watching Steve Willis now, I can't take my eyes off Steve Willis. I sometimes take my eye off the fight because I just love watching him.
Yeah, it was when we got the sheets beforehand with all the officials and stuff, I was just scanning through for Steve Willis. I was like, oh no, I can't see him anywhere. And then main event, sure enough, the big man.
Saved the best for last.
Exactly. So, it's a pity. Like, I'd say Billy Joe Saunders' presence at that fight probably would have added another 10% in terms of the cachet of the event. You know, that would have been a proper elite. Like, I think described it as a chess match on a previous show, and like, in terms of skill, like, granted, Billy, he's not the best representative of boxing outside the ring, but in the ring, he's a real, you know, a really slick boxer. And it would have been a real interesting clash of styles, in the sense that they're very similar rather than, you know, a mixture of styles. It would have been who would have the better of those high-end technical exchanges. And it's just hard to know. We probably will see that fight down the line. I think the word is Billy Joe vacated the title, so the WBO are going to look at it that favorably and maybe give him a 6-month suspension. So he'll be back around early part of next year. I think there's like a weird sort of a technical thing whereby Billy is granted to fight in the UK if he wants to. Like, he'll be banned within the American commissions, but he could still fight in the UK. So it's all up in the air at the moment. But
Yeah, sure, it might be a bad thing for Billy Joe Saunders, because he would have got another look at Andrade, and if they do end up fighting, he'll have a bit more to work with.
And that's another thing on Simon's point earlier, that when you're in the gym preparing for a southpaw, you know, a slick southpaw, and then a couple of weeks beforehand you're presented with this, you know, marauding puncher from Africa that no one's really that familiar with, I suppose you have to kind of, you know, take your chances, and he's kind of learning as he went. I'm sure there wasn't that much film on Walter before the fight, so Andre was probably a little bit wary of, you know, exposing himself too much.
Yeah, there was a good crowd there for him, because he's obviously Rhode Island, he's not too far away.
Yeah, there was a lot of boo-boo chants, and yeah, as you said, from Providence, and there was a lot of them made the trip down, and it was just a little bit of disappointment. I think after one of the knockdowns, he jumped up onto the turnbuckle, yeah, and the place was shaking, and it was like, if the referee had waved it off there, that would have been a real star-making turn for Andre. That clip would have been played over and over again, but as it turned out, it was quite a meek ending to proceedings. And
that was a great punch.
It was a great shot. Like, he's class. Like, and imagine how good he was at light middleweight, where, you know, where he had a size advantage over everybody, and he just never got the fights. And it's a shame. Like, hopefully, it'd be a shame if he, like, much like Golovkin, he doesn't get the big fights till he's a little bit older. But no, I think he's kind of timed this pretty well, and everyone's behind him now. So hopefully, it all pays off.
Yeah, and I know myself and Simon are going to talk about Danny Jacobs later in the show, but he'd certainly be looking at Jacobs if Jacobs wins this weekend. Obviously, both promoted by Matchroom, so it's an easy one to make.
Yeah, and I'd say Danny Jacobs can't believe his luck that all these big middleweight title fights have landed on his lap. He has to get over Derevyanchenko, Vinchenko, which I think the feeling amongst the boxing writers of the weekend was that a lot of them are giving Derevyanchenko a good chance in that fight, so... I know Golovkin avoided him consciously when he was waiting on the Canelo rematch. Derevyanchenko was proposed as an opponent, and the IBF actually stripped him because he avoided Derevyanchenko. So Golovkin didn't want that work, and Danny Jacobs, if he wants another world title, he's going to have to go through him, and it's not going to be a gimme by any means.
No, it's not. No, and we will look into that one a bit more later on, but like, Derevyanchenko was 400 amateur fights. He won 23 out of 24 bouts in the World Series of Boxing. And, you know, he doesn't really have a stacked resume, but if you look at the other fighters that have come out of the Ukraine, Lomachenko and Usyk, you can see why GGG passed on that one.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, as you said, like, it would have been nonsensical for Golovkin to take a mandatory challenge at that stage while waiting on one of the most lucrative fights around. So, I wouldn't fancy taking Derevyanchenko on a whim, but Jacobs, it's been enforced by the IBF, so if he wants the world title, he's going to have to take him out. And Danny Jacobs, you know, one of the greatest stories of boxing, and I'll be hoping, I'm sure Derevyanchenko can come again, but Danny Jacobs is entering the last lap of his career, and after all he's been through, it'd be good if he got the win and got a couple more big paydays before he rides off into the sunset, you know.
Do you want to see a Jacobs GGG rematch?
Yeah, I thought it's been a while since I got to watch that fight back, but at the time I thought Jacobs might have done enough. I think the knockdown probably swung it in Golovkin's favour, but a rematch now, I think you'd have to make it even more of a 50-50, given the slight decline that Golovkin has been on, that maybe Jacobs would fancy his chances. But yeah, let's see that one again, and let's see Jacobs against Canelo and Andrade against Canelo. There's some great fights to be made, unless Rocky Fielding comes in and spoils the party in December, but we'll see what happens there.
Before we go, there was other Irish fighters, Niall Kennedy, we mentioned him, but we didn't actually talk about his fight because that wasn't televised. Sean McCombs' fight wasn't televised either. You were there, so how did they perform?
Yeah, we actually have a clip of Niall Kennedy. He was the second fight in action after the event got underway, and he got a good win over Brendan Barrett, and we went to his dressing room after, and we just put it to him that, you know, I think Brendan Barrett was about as wide as he was long, and it was a difficult man to sort of navigate, and here were Niall's thoughts after that fight.
Small opponents, it's another one that I've worked on, and I'm getting, no, I wouldn't say I'm getting used to them, but and there's things I can take out with, like, my jab. I have to be busier with my jab, because when I was throwing it was working, it was easy, so just have to pass through, probably. I have to listen more, maybe. Yeah, it's a win, and I'm going to move on, thank God.
What about that takedown from him?
It was impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good one, yeah.
I was panicking, I thought there was a choke coming after, I didn't know. Yeah, no, he was unorthodox. He was hitting me. I have a dead right arse cheek, and I don't think you're supposed to have one of them in boxing. So. But he was unorthodox. He was a big, rough. Jesus, he was wider than he was tall.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, so he was physically strong. But, yeah, I can't explain some of the things he was doing. He was trying to trip a couple of times, and when he got me down, I remember being on my face and thinking, I'm not 100% sure this lad is stopping here. I didn't know what I was going to do. So. Yeah, but it was unorthodox. Probably, it definitely wasn't pretty, I'd say, but I got over, I got the win, and like no injuries, and thank God I can go again next week if I had to.
And what is it like to box at a big show like that now?
It's amazing, and it's like fantastic support. My support out here is getting better and better. And I've lads here from Gorey that had booked the flights, and Gorey are in the county final tomorrow and hurling at home, so that's a massive thing. But wearing the Nav and the socks for it, and look, that people wouldn't know that fight was very. There's a lot of sentimental stuff going on. As well, my best friend is battling cancer at home. His leukemia is under a lot of pressure, and it's the first time myself and the wife have both been away from the little man as well. So, yeah, look, there was a lot of reasons to fight, and there was a lot of reasons to win. And bar a chokehold, that man wasn't beating me tonight. You know that way? I think the chokehold he would have, alright. So yeah, we move on anyway. Thank God, it definitely wasn't pretty. But I'm not pretty, so maybe that explains it.
Who's the
Irish
heavyweight
champion?
The
Lumberman,
is it?
It's Bacon. Yeah. We're talking to Kevin McBride about which drama. We're trying to get that made for the team. that's Bacon. I'm not best in Ireland, I'm best in it's not that it wouldn't interest me, I wouldn't dishonour to be you or anything like that, but I've never had success as an Irish amateur, so my objective when I started as a pro wasn't to be successful in Ireland, it was to build what I'm building here, and thanks to Ken Casey and Packy and Murphy's Boxing and Matchroom now letting me on a show like this. And I think a show that the ticket seller, my crowd is after improving as well, so hopefully I'll get back on one as well. Maybe a little bit of prettier fight the next time, hopefully.
When are you back to work now?
Yeah. Wednesday. I knew Gavin had asked. I knew straight up. For anyone that doesn't know, I'm back in work Wednesday. I mean that. Please don't say I'm in at 7 o'clock because I only get back Tuesday, but I think I actually am in at 7 in the morning. So everyone that meets me in Wicklow on Wednesday, I apologise for the humour I'd be.
So that was Irish heavyweight Niall Kennedy. He's back to work on Wednesday as a guard. You know, it's a great story. If anyone wants to know more about Niall, there's some great pieces doing the rounds. I think Andy Lee did one with him a couple of weeks ago where just got into the story of his son and, you know, some of the family background with Niall Kennedy. Is just a great story for Irish boxing and a really good win at the weekend. You know, Brendan Barrett, another undefeated heavyweight. You know, it's never easy to take someone's O, and Brendan Barrett, although a little bit limited in terms of, you know, technical skills, like had all the wherewithal in the world in terms of forward momentum and whatnot, former MMA fighter, and he actually dropped Niall with a bit of a quasi judo hip toss or something. I don't know what it was, but I think Niall alluded to it in that interview there. It was a really slick performance. Niall just levels above in terms of technical acumen and got the job done, and he's really carved out a nice niche for himself in the domestic market in America. I don't know what his aspirations are like long term, but there's an NABA title in the offing if he wants it, and let's just see what happens with Niall. He's kind of riding the crest of a wave now, and he had a big vocal Boston following there in the crowd. Mickey Ward greeted him at ringside, so it was great. It's just a great occasion for him, and it's onwards and upwards from here. He can be whatever he wants to be, really.
Sean McCombe,
yeah, that was his American debut. Kicked things off, and as I said, just big Irish representation, so he got that rub, and just like those amateur skills paid off. But he's really shown some spite in his punches, and got your man out of there in the third round. So it's just all you can expect from a learning fight. We've seen some of the other Irish amateurs have had, you know, trouble sort of switching over and getting their men out of there, but there was no problems for Sean McCombe. He was on top from the get-go, and impressive. And you know, he's 26 now, so he'll want to get a move on and make his mark. You know,
some other fights in the card. Scott Quigg was there, obviously now being trained by Freddie Roach, and had an early stoppage. What do you make of that?
Scott Quigg, like, I had a lot of time for Scott Quigg. Like, his style didn't have much of an amateur pedigree, but he's kind of made up for last time in the pros. And under Freddie Roach, like, he's your prototypical Freddie Roach fighter, you know, pressure, hooks inside. And, you know, it was a real firefight while it lasted. It only lasted about 4 minutes in total, but they were both going hell for leather. And Quigg, just a naturally bigger man. It's interesting, that fight was, you know, at super feather. He missed the featherweight limit when he fought Oscar Valdez a couple of months ago.
Yeah,
I think like his best bet would be try and make featherweight again. It's just whether he can get the fights at featherweight. You know, Kid Galahad was on the undercard, and he's the mandatory challenger for the winner of Josh Warrington and Carl Frampton. So that IBF title seems to be a ways away for Scott Quigg. He's had the Valdez experience. You know, not going to do that again. Leo Santa Cruz, you know, we've seen how hard it is to nail down a fight with him, and then no one wants Gary Russell Jr. You know, there's no money to be made there, and he's probably the pick of the bunch. So I think maybe from a, like, you'd probably see the best Scott Quigg at featherweight, but from an opportunity standpoint, maybe a la Ricky Burns, he should probably move up to super feather, win a world title there, and then maybe use that as leverage to draw one of the other lads out again. Maybe a Carl Frampton rematch at super featherweight could be the long game for Scott Quigg. We'll see what happens there, you know.
Jesus, I just hope it's better than the first one. Did you get invited for beers with Tommy Coyle?
Oh, that was great. That was like, that's what I love about boxing, Phil. It's just that these two lads, that was a proper little, you know, Massachusetts war those two lads were having. You know, there's no sort of illusions that we're going to be slick Floyd Mayweather boxers. Those lads just went toe-to-toe for 10 rounds. And anyone who's seen Tommy Coyle fight, they know that he can't fight any other way. And Ryan Kuzniewski, or that's a difficult Polish name, I'm not going to try it again, but the two lads just went for it. And Ryan's a lovely guy, one of the nicest lads you're going to meet in boxing. And it was a real big platform for him. And you could actually see in that clip I shared on social media that when he came into the dressing room, he was just beaming, having lost the fight. He was just delighted to be able to showcase his wares in what was practically a hometown crowd for him. And, you know, a great occasion. And it was one of the most entertaining fights of the night. I think Kid Galahad came along shortly after and was kind of very much the opposite. Like, Kid Galahad, that Ingle style, it's just a nightmare for people who aren't familiar with it. And he was taking on Taka Clary, who's another Freddie Roach fighter. And it was just, Kid Galahad has this thing where he can impose his style on you and make you fight his fight. But unlike the other Ingle fighters, Brooke and even going back to Nassim, he just doesn't have the punch power to like put people away. So you're going to get into these drab sort of 12 round encounters. And Kid Galahad said Carl Frampton will vacate his IBF title rather than fight him. So Carl very much dismissed that out of hand and said he's looking forward to getting in there with Galahad if the opportunity arises. But I don't know. I think unless you're forced to fight him, I think the best course of action is to avoid him, you know?
Yeah, geez, it was an action-packed card. Anyway, before we let you go, Ronan, is there anything that you want to look ahead to for this weekend? Any fights maybe that are worth mentioning? I know we're going to talk about the Danny Jacobs fight a bit more, and Huey Fury is in Bulgaria for a world title eliminator as well. Is there any other ones there?
Yeah, no, just put it back to you. I know you're looking forward to the Huey Fury Pulev fight. What's your feeling? Do you think he's going to get the job done?
See, obviously Pulev has been out for 16 months, and you know, I was actually only watching the Fury and Parker fight back, and you know, I remember when the decision came in, people were disgusted with the width of the decision in terms of how many points Parker was given on two cards. But Fury fought that on the back foot. He obviously, that was his game plan, and he frustrated Parker. But if he's in Bulgaria, he's going to have to give a bit more in terms of attack, because you know, if you're going over to someone's backyard, you have to convince the judges, because the home crowd are going to sway the judges. So he's going to have to do more. But I'd like to think he's learned from that Parker fight.
Yeah, and Huey, like, he's a nightmare for the heavyweight division because he's got that Tyson Fury style, but not quite the profile in terms of making money. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of Fury Wilder talk over in America as well. You know, that fight's very much creeping onto the horizon, and Declan Taylor is away to Alabama to visit the Wilder camp. So I think everyone's kind of looking forward to that one now. The hype is building a little bit, and we're only 3 weeks away from Bellew Usyk, and I just cannot wait for that fight. It's just going to be, it's an odd one. I think we've spoken about it, where you just have to favour Usyk so heavily, but any sort of Tony Bellew event, you just have to give him more than a puncher's chance, because he's an underrated boxer, and if he can get his shots away, he's going to cause Usyk all kinds of trouble. So that the countdown clock is very much on for that fight, and I'm really looking forward to it. That's my next outing. I'm going to take a couple of weeks off and recuperate, and then I'll be ready for that one.
You going to take the After Brawl credit card again and head over, or are you going to anchor from here?
What? This this evasive After Brawl credit card that doesn't exist, Simon. Yeah, I might use it. No, I'll be over there, but it'll be on my own dime or someone else's. I'll see what happens.
Okay, lovely stuff, Ronan. Safe trip back, and yeah, you know, you'll be back in with us in a few days, and you'll be brought right back down to reality.
Yeah, I'll be in the office soon, and I'll be probably semi-conscious, but I'll be there in body, maybe not in mind. We'll see what happens.
You may bring us back something, will you?
Yeah, I have a Red Sox mug here, Phil, so I'll bring that into the office anyway.
Lovely stuff. Cheers, Ronan.
See you, Ronan.
Cheers, lads. Good luck.
Yeah, so you may have noticed we've actually switched seats now since we spoke to Ronan. He's got a tough life, doesn't he?
Yeah, he seems to be enjoying himself over there anyway. And in fairness to him, you know, watching fighting from 4:30 till, 10 or 11 at night isn't the worst job in the world. So we're looking forward to having him back. But, you know, it was a great weekend for Irish fighters. It started on Thursday night with Jason Quigley. And he spoke on OTBM on Friday, directly after the fight. And this is what he had to say.
It's great to go and win a vacant title, but when you go out there, won a vacant title, then you go and defend it, then you can really say you're the real champion. You know, it's a great feeling, and it was a great fight tonight.
Yeah, very much a case of job done, but tougher work than you expected, Jason?
Yeah, to be honest, you know, the first 4 or 5 rounds did exactly what my corner told me to do, did exactly what the game plan was, and went out there, you know, boxed the ears off him, so I did, as you could say, in the first 4 or 5 rounds, and it was kind of maybe a bit too easy, and then I got a wee bit lazy and got brought back into a bit of a war and a bit of a fight. I don't know if that's the Irish in me or what it is, you know, but I got drawn into a fight, and I had to get back out of that again, and get back to my boxing near the later end of the fight, and that's what I did to get the victory.
What's happening at that stage, Jason? Because by all accounts, reading the reports, that was exactly it. It looked as if it was a case of your really confident start. Like, you're, by the sounds of things, you're thinking, right, I have this guy exactly where I want him. So what are you thinking at that point when you talk about that sort of laziness?
Yeah, well, I'm not too sure. You know, it's something that I'm going to have to go back and assess now, you know, kind of what went on through that distance. Maybe it was just Freddy Hernandez, you know what I mean? He's a strong veteran, experienced fighter. You know, maybe that was his game plan, you know, to maybe take a few shots early on and then try and come on strong in the middle half of the fight. And, you know, it worked for him, but it just wasn't good enough.
Yeah. And in that sort of, that middle part, like, it becomes a bit of a slugfest, is that right? It's a good bit of sort of pulling and dragging,
yeah,
I suppose.
Of course it was, you know, and when I'm at my boxing and when I'm moving, sticking the jab, throwing nice clean right hands, everything like that, you know, everything's on point, everything's looking like $1 million. I don't know, as it says, what's in me. I do tend to like to get into a bit of a war and let shots go and try and bang men out of there. It's something that I'm going to have to just pull back the reins on a little bit and stick to my skill and stick to my talent a lot better. But, you know, as I says, and I said this in interviews before the fight, Freddy Hernandez is going to be a great test for me, and he was a great test for me. These are the types of fights and the type of experience that you need to get to the top level, and tonight you could say maybe I passed an exam of being in with a veteran, and you know, he's a top class fighter, so it was a lot of experience. He's a rugged, uses all the tricks of the trade that he has learned over his 19-year span, and you know, he used them well tonight. But as I said, that's in the bank for me now. That's experience learned tonight, and I came away victorious and still undefeated and still the NABF middleweight champion.
So that was Jason Quigley speaking to Adrian and Owen on Friday's OTBAM. And I think it's fair to say, Phil, that he got a slightly harder fight than maybe he was expecting.
Yeah, he said, though, he wasn't surprised by how hard the fight was. It's interesting to see the sunglasses were on because he did get a bad cut. And that's actually when the fight started to turn a bit, because he started well. He did what he was asked to do. He was landing 1-2s. He was doing all the boxing. And that's the way he's going to be trained at the Ingle Gym. That, you know, when he was at Manny Robles, at times he was getting drawn into these wars. You heard him there where maybe it's just the Irish mentality. You put an Irishman and a Mexican into the ring and there's no retreat. They just meet in the centre of the ring. They go toe-to-toe.
Yeah.
But he can't keep getting hit like that. I mean, that's something that will come, though. He'll learn from that. you know, he did take a few digs, but you know, it was never a fight when I was watching that I thought he's going to lose. But it's certainly one that he's going to learn from. Freddie Hernandez has been in with some decent opponents. Okay, he's coming to the end, but he loved that fight. He went back to his corner a few times and he was smiling. He's like, this is what it's all about. I think when Quigley got cut in the fourth round, it's almost as if Hernandez literally smelt the blood and said, right, now we've got ourselves a brawl and that's what I want. Whereas obviously Quigley and his corner didn't want the brawl. Although we've seen already, Quigley is well able to brawl. But I suppose if he wants to get that to that world title level, he's going to have to try and avoid getting hit.
Yeah, I think because he was so clean and precise in the early rounds, and he'd stacked up maybe three or four rounds before it turned into a bit of a 50-50 fight then down the end, and that's what got him ultimately over the line. I think people were expecting or hoping that he would just outbox him the whole way through, and instead he got dragged into this brawl, which he came out the right side of. There was a few people giving out about the scorecards afterwards saying it was too wide. I would probably agree, but the thing about it is the right guy won the fight.
Yeah, but see, sometimes the judges can see the fight better than us. We're watching it on TV and Quigley's landing the better punches. You know, he was throwing better shots. The brawl, it's all up close and Hernandez wants to rough you up and that's the way he fights. But some the judges could be looking and think, no, Quigley's actually landing the better shots. Okay, they're both getting hit, but Quigley's shots are of the higher quality, so they're going to give it to him.
Yeah. No, I think regardless of the size of the cards, the right guy won the fight.
Yeah.
That's the main thing. If it was the other way around, then there's controversy all over the place. I mean, you go back to Lewis Ritson's fight with Patera, and one judge had 8-4 to Ritson, and that's just, that was nonsense.
Yeah, but see, that goes back to the hometown kind of thing, where, you know, that's what happens. The crowd make noises when you land a punch, so the judges get swayed by it. It's natural. Like we've talked about it, there's no exact science to judging. It's very frustrating at times. The only thing you can do though is if a judge has a shocker, ban them, suspend them.
Yeah,
and then
I agree completely. Yeah,
instead of you see the next week and they're like, oh, there was a fight on there. What fight was I watching? And Adelaide Bird, for example,
yes,
was a judge. Like,
yeah, and how can this keep happening?
Yeah. So the interesting thing then, obviously, like Quigley had talked about how, you know, he was in line for a shot against Ryota Murata, a world title shot. Okay, it never materialized. Yeah. I think the Freddie Hernandez fight, it's one of those that in a few years, if Quigley keeps improving, which we expect him to, then you'll say, that Freddie Hernandez fight was a great one. But if he comes back in his next fight and hasn't learned that much from it, then you've got to start saying, right, you've got to start learning. But he's still in very early days with the Ingle gym. Obviously, Dominic Ingle wasn't there. He was actually in Boston, Kyle Galahad. He was in his corner that night.
Yeah.
So John Ingle was there. But look, the message is going to be, we know the way the Ingle camp like the fight, just basically avoid getting hit, and that's something we're going to see down the line with Jason Quigley. Murata and Brandt was the main event, but before we get into that, Michael Conlon was on that card. And see, we always kind of talk about Quigley and Conlon almost in the same way, because between them they've been in world amateur finals. Obviously Conlon won his final, Quigley got a silver medal, so they've got the amateur pedigree.
Yeah.
Conlon fought an Italian, Nicola Cipolletta, who was a nightmare to fight because he just ran for the whole fight. He was a lot taller than Conlon. He was like Simon Cowell. He had his trunks that high up. And Conlon actually got warned a few times for hitting below the belt.
Yeah.
You know, he'd cover up. He was an absolute nightmare. That's a fight that Conlon will learn from because he was so frustrated. He was never going to lose the fight, obviously. It was all about, you know, trying to gain experience. So next time he's in the ring with somebody like that, he's going to maybe show a bit more patience. But it gets stopped in the seventh round because Cipolletta is not doing it. He gets hit every so often and, you know, he smiles at Conlon or he's kind of going, you know, you're not hurting me. Like, he's bouncing around. He's full of energy. But the ref stopped it and Cipolletta was disgusted. So afterwards, just to prove that there's nothing wrong with him, he gets into the middle of the ring and starts doing push-ups. And you can actually hear Conlon laughing because he's just thinking, oh, you're an idiot. It's another win, and he's already been confirmed for the Frampton Warrington card in Manchester on the 22nd of December. So that's like Conlon wants these, you know, he wants higher quality opponents. A good fight with him for him would be Nikitin, who was on the same card, won, but looks like he damaged his thumb. So I'm not sure when a Conlon and Nikitin rematch can happen. If people aren't aware of their rivalry, it's obviously, that was the controversial boxer that Conlon faced at the Olympics in Rio, where he clearly won, but he didn't get the fight. And he decided, I'm done with amateur boxing. These things happen for a reason. It's the kind of fight that would suit Conlon, because he's going to beat him, but also it gets him more recognition, because people, there's a narrative to that, where, I mean, how many people knew anything about Nicola Cipolletta before the fight? On Saturday night, whereas at least if he fights Nikitin, people go, oh yeah, that's the guy that got that robbery against Conlon at the Olympics.
Yeah,
and it, you know, it gets more attention, and then obviously Conlon wants to win as well, because it settles the score and it just moves him.
He wants to win again to settle the score.
Exactly, and it just keeps him working up the ladder. But another fighter that's got a new trainer, Adam Booth, and definitely, I was more impressed with Conlon. There was some lovely body shots he landed, and real spite in those punches as well.
He's very lean and he's very slick on his feet, and you know, Irish boxing is actually in a great space at the moment in terms of the fights in the ring. And Conlon, he could be knocking on world title fight in the next 12
months. Yeah, we do expect Quigley and Conlon to be world champions. There's a lot of pressure there, but they are able to handle the pressure. Again, we talked about it with Andy last week, that the frustration maybe for the two is that they want to be fighting for world titles as soon as possible, but just be careful what you wish for. Just, you know, get more rounds on.
Yeah, I think Andy said the two of them just need to calm it for 12 months, and then, of course, Quigley, as we heard on the interview with Aries, calling for GGG or Canelo maybe in 12 months' time if the two of them are top of the tree.
Yeah, so 2019, big year, so obviously I know Conlon has another outing before the end of the year.
Yeah. No, it's something to look forward to. But just going back to that Murata fight that Quigley was after, like he was completely outclassed and outboxed by Rob Brandt. How did you see that fight, and did you see it going that way, or what did you think of it?
Not many people thought this was going to happen, but Brandt came out like a train. And the first couple of rounds, like the energy, like just throwing so many punches, and Murata's corner weren't panicking because they thought he's not going to be able to maintain this. But Brandt, his team had said, look, we've trained for 15 rounds. We're well able for this. And, you know, they were able to say, with three rounds to go, they were able to tell their man, you're three rounds away from becoming a world champion. So just don't take your eye off it. Like, you've got this. And it was so one-sided. The difference, Murata's face after the first few rounds, like, he was marked up and, you know, he was constantly looking for that big right hand. But I can see why Quigley would have been attracted to a fight to Murata, because he is quite one-dimensional.
Yeah.
Now, he has some serious power, so if he does hit you, but towards the latter stage of the fight, Brandt is standing in the middle of the ring, toe-to-toe, and he's exchanging with him, and he's got better combinations. I'm really impressed with Rob Brandt. Talk of a rematch. This scupper is what they hope Murata would win and maybe fight Golovkin in Japan, because he's got such a huge following in Japan, Murata, obviously.
Yeah.
It could have made for a super fight in Japan. So Murata might get a rematch with Rob Brandt. But yeah, I was really impressed with Rob Brandt. I hadn't seen that much of him because obviously he had fought at different weights before. But he certainly found his... it goes back to what we were saying earlier about the middleweight division.
Yeah, well, I mean, Brandt averaged 100 punches a round in that fight. Yeah. So if it was marked up after four rounds, you could see the state he was in after 12.
Yeah, no, he was relentless. And the telltale signs for a fighter then, obviously, later in the fight is if they start holding, because they need the rest. There was nothing. He just kept going. So I don't know what they did in training camp, but he was well-conditioned. And it meant so much to him. He just kind of got the sense that he wasn't going to walk out of that ring unless he won the world title. Okay, it's not as lucrative a world title as some of the others, because, look, the king of the middleweight division at the moment is Canelo.
And it's fighting at super middleweight.
Yeah.
But even looking at the division, I mean, we have the Jacobs-Deravianchenko fight this weekend, which is a super fight between two extremely gifted boxers and technicians. And we said earlier that, like, Deravianchenko has 400 amateur fights. He's 23 out of 24 in the World Series of Boxing. But his resume is quite empty, whereas you look at Jacobs and he's got the win, knockout wins over Quillen and True and Mora. So looking at it, you'd have to favour Jacobs on paper. But the more I think about it, I think I like Derevianchenko on points.
Yeah, but we've seen with Lomachenko that, you know, you can have an excellent amateur career and be fast-tracked in the pro ranks.
Yeah.
It seems to be happening more and more these days. But I wonder, will weight be a problem for Jacobs? Because this weekend, when they rehydrate, they can't rehydrate until the secondary weigh-in, which is on the day of the fight. Whereas when Jacobs fought Triple G, he was able to rehydrate after the first weigh-in the day before. And by the time he got into the ring, like, he was huge.
Yeah.
So I wonder, will that be an issue at all? Do you know what? It's one of those things that it mightn't be at all, and maybe you come back to the fight and go, it wasn't an issue. But if he's struggling, then it's talked about.
No, I think you've got to be onto something there, specifically because it's coming up in the Cannes-Brook negotiations, where Brook has agreed to fight at 147 by the looks of things. Khan wants to fight at 147, but Khan is looking like he's stipulating that Brook can't rehydrate more than 10 pounds after he makes weight, and that appears to be the sticking point. So he could be very well onto something there in relation to Jacobs.
Yeah, with certain fighters, like, they will put their body through hell. I know all fighters do, to make weight, most of them anyway. But then you get to the finish line, and then it's right, let's rehydrate. But can you imagine if you have to go to bed that night and you're still keeping an eye on your weight?
Yeah, you're off the tomato sauce. Yeah, no, it could be. Like, when you make weight, apparently that's the release. You look at, for example, not to be bringing
two
up...
Two steaks, please.
Yeah, not to be bringing up... But even David Hay, when he fought Enzo McInerney, he made the weight and he had two steaks that night or something like that, and he was just huge the next night. So it's maybe something boxing needs to look at down the line.
Starving, then you're talking about steak.
But just, I think we, in terms of the middleweight division, we're seeing a very stacked middleweight division for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And if you list through the names from GGG, Canelo, Andrade, Jacobs, Derevianchenko, and then even further down, Murata, Ndam, and then I think Quigley should be looking for Ndam if that fight's doable next for him. I think it'll get him into the ratings. He'll still be under the radar a little bit while the top guys kind of sort it out, and then maybe further down the line, he can look at Murata or Andrade or whoever else.
Yeah, no, there's a lot of good fights there. It'd be interesting, you know, I wonder how soon back these fighters or his camp look back at the fight and the performance, and they're able to identify what they did right, what they did wrong. But I think the reason there's so much kind of talk about Jason Quigley is because, you know, you can see how dedicated he is, so he's going to do whatever it takes. And I'd imagine in his next fight, like, you'll see improvements and gradually. So that's why I think we've talked about just work your way up, and then when you get that chance, you're ready. Because you've seen it before with Irish boxers, where they go in for a world title, but they shouldn't really be there. And then you see with other fighters that on the night, it's their time. Like,
well, not to be going back to Tennyson, but like, I know he took the opportunity on 6 week notice, but he jumped up three or four levels there. And of course, it's easy to say it now, but
yeah. Well, see, the attraction for that was, okay, he could be fighting a guy that's a better boxer than him, but up until Saturday, we didn't think Tevin Farmer's power was going to be an issue.
Yeah,
like, you would have thought, okay, he might get outboxed, but he has the ability, with the power that he has, that he could stop Farmer if he's able to get him. He's quite elusive, obviously, which we found out on Saturday. But I don't think many expected an early stoppage, when, like, fifth round stoppage. I didn't see that coming. I thought we were in for the long haul. And once that's there, you've always got a fighting chance.
No, I agree. I had Farmer in my head on points by a pretty wide decision. I thought Tennyson would get to the final bell.
Yeah,
but I think he learned a lot from that fight. I know Ronan referenced it earlier. He will learn a lot from that fight, and it'll be interesting to see what he does next.
Every time he's lost, he's replied pretty well. Like, so,
yeah.
That's, like, you know, the days are gone where, okay, there's still certain fighters that worry about their O, Like, yeah, but you just have to, you know, all the best fighters down the years have lost fights. Okay, obviously Floyd Mayweather will say he hasn't, but...
Well, we can get into that discussion again about how he avoided and how he navigated his career.
But yeah, exactly, but...
An unbeaten record, I find, brings more questions than answers.
Mm.
You look at Joe Calzaghe. You can't speak ill of Joe Calzaghe, but was there really that level?
But he started taking on the big fights towards the end.
When he won,
you know, when he beat the likes of Kessler and he beat Bernard Hopkins, but that was a very close decision. And then he beat Roy Jones Jr.
Should he have rematched Kessler in Denmark?
Possibly. Like, the fight in Cardiff was amazing.
It was brilliant. It was absolutely fantastic.
It was on TV there about a month ago. It was brilliant.
Yeah. Oh, you could watch that over and over again.
Yeah.
And even then, Brian Nielsen was the other undefeated heavyweight there for a while, and like nobody ever talks about him. Right.
Yeah. Well, speaking of heavyweights, I know we kind of touched on it there with Ronan, but Huey Fury and Kubrat Pulev in Bulgaria this Saturday. I always like when the fights are in Europe so I can watch them live, because I've gone are the days where I can stay up till 4 in the morning, 5 in the morning and watch these fights. I just have to record them. But yeah, this is a great chance. You know, the way Huey Fury is looking at it, win this fight and I'm a mandatory challenger to one of Anthony Joshua's belts.
Yeah.
Joshua doesn't have an opponent for April yet. Wembley's booked.
Yeah.
So this is a great chance for him. He's had issues, Huey Fury. He had issues with his skin, which was causing like you know, all sorts of side effects. And obviously, you know, his dad trains him. He's so light in his feet. If you watch the Parker fight back, like he frustrated Parker. But as I said earlier, he's going to have to show more if he wants to get a decision in Bulgaria, because that fight was in Manchester. So if he was going to get a hometown decision, that would have been the fight he got it. But Parker, one judge gave it a draw. The other two gave it to Parker quite comfortably. But his right uppercut is a shot I'd be looking at on Saturday. He's fighting an older man, like a 37-year-old. I tell you, when you get to 37, like...
You can't take the uppercuts anymore.
But it's a great chance for him. And he responded from the defeat to Parker with a win against Sam Sexton, British title. Like, so he won the British title. And yeah, I've always kind of thought, like, Huey Fury, you know, he just has something about him that we certainly haven't seen the best of him. So I'm just hoping we see it this weekend.
Yeah, I didn't realise he was a mandatory for one of Joshua's titles this weekend. That opens a whole kind of Pandora's box of possibilities.
Yeah, that's if it happens. See, Joshua has so many titles now, he could vacate some of them.
Yeah.
But all he can do, like, if Huey Fury wins, if Joshua doesn't want to fight him, and, like, they were meant to fight, but the Fury camp said, like, the offer was just...
Peanuts.
It was an insult, so they didn't take it.
Well, if Joshua was ever going to make a stance about vacating the belt, he should have done it against Povetkin and not given him the opportunity to have a big payday. So if Huey Fury wins and he's a mandatory, I think Joshua should take that fight.
But yeah, well, see, it depends what happens with Dillian Whyte and Derek Chisora. You'd imagine Dillian Whyte will win that, and then Dillian White's going to be in the conversation for that April fight at Wembley.
Yeah, true.
Because some people say, oh, I don't want to see that again. The first fight was brilliant.
It was, yeah. It was really good.
Like, White had him. I remember watching, I was going, holy crap, he has him here.
It was a left hook he caught him with, and then he stumbled against the ropes.
And it was like, in fairness, when Joshua came back, and that was an emphatic stoppage.
Yeah.
But you just wonder, and Dillian Whyte, his fights are always great. Like the Parker fight, the end was unbelievable. If it went on for another 30 seconds, Parker would have beaten him. But getting back to Fury, like Pulev was meant to fight Joshua and obviously pulled out. Late replacement was Carlos Takam, and Joshua took care of him. Pulev hasn't fought for 16 months. That's going to be an issue. He's 37. So I think this is I wouldn't say it's now or never for Huey Fury, but, you know, he's 24, so he's so young. But if he can go to Bulgaria and beat Pulev, that's a big statement. Only one man has beaten Pulev. Vladimir.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, Vladimir Klitschko beat him. You have to go back a few years, but Pulev is, you know, he's beaten some decent lads down the years, but I think Huey Fury is going to get the job done.
All right. And just before we finish up, I know it's still a couple of weeks out, and Ronan referenced it again earlier, the Usyk-Bellew bout. I'm really, really looking forward to that. At 3 weeks out, I don't think I've been looking forward to a fight this much.
Yeah, this is
far out.
Yeah, and they actually, watching the Boston card the other night, was on Sky, they played a promo for it, and, you know, it just gets you going.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. It's, you know, you think Usyk's going to win because he's the better boxer. He should win, but I've thought that in the past about Tony Bellew when he wins these fights.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd say Usyk will win.
I'm going Usyk on points right now. I think I'll stick with that as well.
He'll just outbox him.
Yeah, I was looking back at when he fought Joe Joyce in the World Series of Boxing, and it's available on YouTube there if you look back at it. And he just dominated him for the four rounds.
Yeah.
Was it five rounds? Four rounds. And all three cards, 40-36.
Yeah.
And that is the closest kind of... Joyce would be similar to Bellew, kind of, I don't want to say plodding, but heavy-footed, planting his punches. And Usyk just danced around him, but not in the way that he was avoiding him, in and out. Took him where he wanted the fight to go. And at the end, actually, he stood and banged, and he landed a few as well. So,
he's class.
Yeah. He's absolutely superb.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's it for this week. So if you have any questions, you can hit us with the hashtag Off the Brawl, and we'll see you again next week. Good luck.